Dan, as is the way in politics, Little Proud is almost yesterday's news already. But I do want to ask about, you know, what explanation he gave for stepping down from the leadership. And was his leadership under threat? Why now?
It's a really good question. I mean, like I said earlier on, we had no sense that this was coming. We got an alert in our inboxes, I think at about 3 o'clock on Tuesday, that he was going to make a personal statement with his wife. And when you see those two things, you say, I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen. But I mean, his explanation was, he used this phrase a few times. He said he was just buggered, that he was tired. It's difficult. It's draining to be the leader of the parliamentary party. He's led the party through a very tumultuous period. Of course, there was two splits with the Liberal Party, the defection of Barnaby Joyce, the rise of One Nation. Now, in terms of whether his leadership was secure, I mean, he was challenged by Colin Boyce. He soundly defeated Boyce in that instance. I don't think Boyce was necessarily the main threat to him, but that obviously reaffirmed his authority.
And that was just a month ago.
Just a month ago. But I think there is a sense, I mean, when the dust had settled, when we'd taken a deep breath, even went back and look at some of the reporting from the time that the Liberals and the Nationals split in January over the hate speech laws, all of the reporting at that time said Susan Lee's gone and Little Proud's probably gone as well. But that episode had so damaged the two leaders that their positions were probably not tenable. Obviously, Susan Lee's fate was probably sealed a lot sooner. And certainly there were very senior people in the Liberal Party who no longer had faith, didn't trust him. And so I don't think they're necessarily surprised. And they also think that he engineered his own downfall, that he was responsible for those coalition splits. He was responsible for the chaos that contributed to the rise of One Nation. So he can't complain now that he's moved on.
I want to look forward, Dan. We have a by-election coming up in the seat of Farah in May. Many will be watching that closely, not only as a test of Angus Taylor's leadership, but also an indication of the levels of support for One Nation in regional New South Wales. How bruising do you think that might be for the Nationals?
I think the entire contest for the Liberals and Nationals is going to be very difficult. Obviously, it's a Liberal-held seat and had been for 25 years under Susan Lee. So the Nationals haven't been there for a while, and they don't go into this contest as, I mean, they're not nearly the favourites. There is a very big field at the moment. You probably say that the independent candidate is probably the favourite along with One Nation, and then the Liberals and Nationals are perhaps, their role in this is going to be where they direct preferences. But it is going to be seen as a real test of Angus Taylor and now Matt Canavan, because it really is the first electoral test. Obviously, we have the election, state election in South Australia coming up later this month, but it is the first federal test of, can One Nation translate these quite extraordinary opinion poll numbers into winning a seat on the ground in regional Australia? And I think that depending on the result, depending on the scale of the result, depending on the kind of the issues that the campaign is fought over, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the coalition parties deal with that and respond to it. Because let's assume that One Nation wins. Do they go further to the right chasing One Nation, or do they say we can't keep chasing One Nation down there? It's exposing us too much on our other flank. We need to become more centrist. I doubt that'll happen, but these are all the questions and debates and challenges that they're going to have to confront if they lose, which I think, if the vote was held today, I think it's unlikely the Liberals or Nationals would win that seat.
Dan, one that many people will be watching and analysing very closely. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
That was Chief Political Correspondent Dan Jervis-Bardi in Canberra. You can find more of his work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to his latest piece on the Full Story page. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert and Karishma Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning and Daniel Simo. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget you can subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.